What is up, parents? Alec here. Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Life Podcast. This week, we have a very special episode with an amazing guest. Miss Jill Olin is going to be joining us, and she's going to be giving us some wisdom from the end. Now, obviously, parenting never actually ends, but she has two daughters that have graduated college and are often married, and so she is a full-time empty nester, and so she just has a really good perspective, and honestly, the conversation was so good. She was just everything about it was awesome. And so I can't wait for you guys to get to listen to it. But just a quick heads up, as you are listening, you may hear some music in the background. Our worship team was practicing near where we were recording, and we didn't catch it till afterwards. And so I just wanted to give you that quick disclaimer that you're not going crazy, that you can hear some music in the background, but thankfully it is not distracting. So without any more delay, here is this week's episode. What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Life Podcast. My name is Alec, and with me, as always, is Mr. Shane Sisk and Miss Kelly Ablaza. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Very good.
Before Shane can steal my thunder and introduce our guest, like he has done before, we have a very special guest with us today, one of our family ministry volunteers that crushes everything that she does. Miss Jill Olin. Miss Jill, how are you today?
Doing great. Glad to be here.
Which by the way, I am going to jump in. Miss Jill.
Already.
Miss Jill is probably one of my family's favorite people in the whole wide world. All three of my kids were in third grade with her, and all three of mine are very different. Yeah. And she loved on them and taught them, and so we are big fans of Miss Jill.
So some background on Miss Jill. She has two daughters that are fully grown, out of the house, and married. So been through two weddings. And you taught third grade for how long?
I taught for about 27 years total. Wow.
And if you can describe that process of stepping away from teaching for like 30 seconds, what was that like?
Completely heart-wrenching. I left at a time when I still absolutely loved what I did.
And why did you do that?
Because the Lord was calling me to something else.
There it is. And so I think it's really cool as we have this conversation, talking, Shane, what you said made me think of this, of just like being a friend of the Olin family, Olin Allen family, getting to see all of the kids that have had Miss Jill. Mm-hmm. When we're at beach games, you're a teacher in the beach system here in Hendersonville. If we're at a game of any sort or any function, or even out in public, and just watching grown-ups, like people my age, going like, oh my goodness, Miss Olin, it's so good to see you, talking about the impact that you had on them.
It's like you're walking with a rock star.
Oh, absolutely.
It is amazing. And I love it.
It is not an exaggeration of like getting to see the students light up when Miss Jill walks in. It is super cool. And I mean, we've all had those teachers, and so it's just cool to know someone that is that teacher for a lot of students.
Well,
so, but Miss Jill is here as our expert witness today on trial.
Expert parents.
Well, I didn't say expert parents. She says specifically not to call her the expert parent, so I went with expert witness. Same thing, but different. But no, today's episode is about some wisdom from the finish line, quote-unquote finish line, because does parenting ever actually end?
Oh, no, absolutely not. It just looks different.
Right.
Right.
And so, but before we hop into that, we have a parenting hack, like always. And so, this week, I don't necessarily have one, but we have a couple we want to discuss about road trips, road trip hacks. What do you guys as parents do on long road trips in the car? I know my parents, I feel really old saying this. We had this like portable TV that was like a 14-inch TV that had a VCR in it.
Yeah.
Able to hook up to the cigarette lighter in the back. And so we would hook that up and then watch movies the entire trip. And I remember that thing was heavy, but it fit perfectly between the two.
It got hot quick too, didn't it?
Oh, I don't know. It was in a case. I never touched it.
Oh, okay. All right.
But anyways, that's what my parents did to shut us up. They would play their music up front, and my brother and I would argue over what movies to watch. Our go-tos were Little Giants and Rookie of the Year.
Classics.
I can watch both of those still and quote them with the actors in the movie.
That's amazing.
Like, and they're like two movies that no one knows about. If you know who Henry Rowan Gardner is, then we can be great friends because there's so many people that don't. Miss Jill, do you know Rookie of the Year? Because it's all based on the Chicago Cubs.
Yes, I do. Okay. I remember seeing it.
Okay, perfect. I feel seen. So anyways, what are y'all's road trip hacks?
First of all, it is obviously changed over the years. Because it's, you know, when I was growing up, we didn't have phones. We didn't have TVs you could put in the car. It was...
Because you're old.
Oh, gosh. There are times where I just want to come across... This room.
Jill, you're not
this
the room. Watch it.
Shane's the one with the gray hair here.
So for us, there was a lot of time spent looking out the window.
I wonder what these signs say.
And don't touch each other. And a lot of don't make me pull over the car. But I think on longer road trips, my parents would play the alphabet game. The alphabet game, and for us, it was just billboards. Or road signs, and you would have to go from A to Z, and whoever got to Z first reading the words was the winner. So that was the big one in our car. And later on, we played a game called Beetlebugs and Motorcycles, and that was another one. And if you got whoever got to 10 first got control of the radio. So that was a big competition in our car.
Yeah. Growing up in my family, I was one of five. And so our road trips, while we say now they were some of our greatest memories, they were horrible at the time, right? Like, and I was the fourth out of five, so I had zero rights in the car, zero space, zero everything. But one of my favorite things my parents would do is we would do a talent show in the car, but you had to record it. And so, of course, back in the day, it was an actual tape recorder with a cassette in it that you would hit record on, and everybody had a couple minutes to record something, and so people would sing quietly into it later, and at the end of whatever it was, we all would vote for your best. And
Did you ever win?
No, because everybody always voted for themselves. So it was 1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1. Except
have made
for
the
my
rule.
Dad. Okay, this is sad though, because it's a little insight into me. I always gave half my vote to my dad.
So look at that.
He would win with 1.5, and I would lose with half. So
that checks out.
That is amazing.
Okay, so my parents, they were great, but they didn't really do anything to entertain us. My dad would throw back a roll of duct tape, and I was one of three. And he had like one of those like four-door like giant trucks. And so it would be like me in the middle and my sisters on either side. And I guess at some point we just like, could not keep our hands to ourselves. So he would just look at me and be like, all right, put the tape down. And we'd have to tape out sections. And he would just be like, stay in your section. We also never stopped. So I remember we would drive from Rhode Island to South Carolina and maybe stop twice, but strictly to just like use the bathroom. And then
we'd
get back
in the
car.
How long of a trip is that?
Hours. Oh, I mean, like at least 12.
That's huge. Because that's for us, we were the same way. We would stop when we needed gas.
Yep.
And you had to use the restroom and get something to eat.
Whether you needed to, we packed
snacks. Yes. So he had like a cooler. I just remember it was very much like, it felt like work. Also, that's how I learned though to read a map, because he would give me the atlas. Mm. Also, I can't say that's illegal, but I remember driving at one point. Like, I didn't have a license. I think I had a permit, but I remember we stopped. He was like, all right, your turn. And I had never driven ever in my life. And I was on a highway. And I said, what? He goes, you got to learn somehow. And I was just like, all right, Dad.
Yes.
So I had a permit. I did have a permit, but I don't know if you could drive on a highway for the first time ever out of state, but the roads were big. Like, the lanes were much wider, so it was safe. It was also very late, because we would always leave at, like, 2 or 3 in the morning and just drive. So that was all I knew. As a parent now, have you guys ever seen those, like, car, like, the back of the seat holders that have all these pockets?
Yes.
Okay, so I do this for my kids, and I load it up with, like, snacks or games and all of these fun things. Because I remember just having duct tape and being like, well, good times. So I try to just find things for them to do. But did anybody ever get car sick?
Oh, yes.
We have a bucket for one of my kids. We learned. Because now if you go from like here to like Gatlinburg or anywhere, there's going to be windy roads. She just knows. She's like, I need the bucket. So we just gave her a little trash can. It's disgusting. But we're like, all right, we'll pull over and you can be sick. And then we're going to keep going. Because the first like 2-3 trips we took with this child, we were like,
That is.
Sorry, that just brought the conversation down.
No, that's amazing. A worse feeling than being carsick. Like, it's only happened to me once, and it was in the mountains of Gatlinburg.
Yes.
And like, I remember my mom would always just be like, "I'm carsick. Like, I have to drive all this stuff." I'm like, "You're such a baby." And then it happened to me, and I was like, "This is the worst." Like, I would rather like feel the pain of like nearly tearing a ligament in my knee time and time again over feeling carsick, because at least with my knee, it's like, all right, I don't move, it doesn't hurt. But carsick, there's nothing you can do. You can't get out of the car, nothing. It's awful.
I have a story, and this is one of the greatest athletic things I've ever seen my wife do. And she was a college basketball player. We had a Suburban. We are driving on a road trip, and I was a lot like my dad. We didn't stop. We didn't pull over. And all of a sudden, one of the kids starts that gagging. Now, I don't do well with that. And so now I'm like, do something. I don't know how she did this. She jumped from the front seat to the back seat and caught the throw up in her hand.
Such a mom move.
And I just went, I was like, such a mom. That is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. That's now, I need to stop. I need to stop because now I'm going to throw up. But it was like, I was like, oh my goodness.
And Kristen's like a tall person.
She's 6'2". I mean, for her to make that move in a car, it was unbelievable.
I have a whole new respect for you guys. Love that.
It was phenomenal. And didn't get all over the car, didn't get all over the kid.
Wow.
I was super impressed.
Mm. Well, if you have any more parenting hacks, let us know in the comments for road trips. Because I'm worried because I'm the one that stops the car every 2.5 hours because I have to pee, and I'm just I can't, like, nothing infuriates me more than the feeling of my bladder being full. Like, it's a pain I don't enjoy. But I also drink a ton of water.
I went on a road trip with a couple friends and their family, and it was Fort Lauderdale to Orlando, 3-hour drive. We would have never stopped ever. We stopped 4 times.
Oh, that's no way.
Stop and it. I looked at them and I went, I don't know what to do right now. We stopped and shopped. We stopped and actually stopped for the restroom, and we stopped and ate. Like, and I just went, you understand, we're an hour away from where we're going. And I've never experienced anything like that. I think that's why I have to drive.
I actually, so we have family super far away. And it's like a 2-day trip if we want to go anywhere, really. But someone told me one time, they're like, it's not about the destination, Kelly. It's about the journey. And I looked at them and I was like, okay, I want to trade places. You go drive 18 hours with 3 children in the backseat. You know? But then we embraced that one trip. And so we just stopped in random cities. And it honestly made the trip so much more enjoyable because I was like, what does this city have to offer for lunch? I don't know. Let's go find out.
That would be fun.
It was because then I remember just like walking around like these downtown, like little quaint areas. And I think it gave my kids something to look forward to. Let's be honest. It gave me something to look forward to because I was the one losing my mind. Like, when are we going to stop? Right. So I think, you know, everybody has their own way.
Yeah.
Traveling. I would much rather
just talk about that. Yeah. Hey, we're driving through St. Louis. They've got an arch.
Look at that.
They've got this. They've got this.
No, see, that's
we're moving on to the next city.
we would drive to New York all the time when I was younger to visit my mom's family. And there was one trip where my parents had like stops that we were going to make along the way. And one of them was Williamsburg,
Virginia.
No, Pennsylvania, wherever Little League World Series is. And like, it was one of the coolest things. Like, just you get to go and like, it's like, oh, this is where like the best young baseball players play and everything. And it was just a really, like, I'm not even that big of a baseball fan, and I wasn't then either, but it was still just cool. Like, my parents had multiple stops like that on the way up that was just like, oh, this was really cool. Didn't help the 20-hour car ride it was, but
and that's what I would be thinking the whole time. I'm going, you know how much time this is adding to our trip? Mm-hmm. Waze says we're supposed to be there in this time, and I think I can beat that. And yet you want to stop.
Oh, you beat it? I've never beaten it.
Oh, I try.
Since having children?
I beat Waze all the time.
I try.
No. Before, I could drive by myself, like, anywhere. You give me my children, there's no way we're making it. Absolutely not. That should, also, I have an idea for a game show. I think we should take people like Alec who don't have children and give them simple tasks to do. Like, hey, Alec, go to the grocery store. You need to get these 10 items. But now, we're going to randomly throw in some toddlers.
That is amazing.
And then just see what happens.
No, that could be amazing.
Wouldn't it be so fun? Because people think, like, oh, how hard can it be?
No.
You just give them a wild card. Here we go. You never knew why.
I'm in. I'm watching that show every week. I'm watching it every week.
I love that.
I will not do that, but maybe there's someone else that would. I'm not. That's not me.
Oh no, it's definitely
like an amazing race.
If we do, if we try it, you're going to be the first episode.
We should do it. Yes, like a trial.
No. Not me. Fuck. Maybe Jonathan. We can get Jonathan. No. I think he would do better. Anyways.
No, Jonathan would just leave him.
If you're still listening at this point, thank you so much for sticking with us. We're getting to the actual point of this episode, which is getting to the finish line, quote unquote, which there really is never any finish line. But as, you know, Miss Jill, like, I don't know if you're prepared for this question, but I'm just going to ask you this anyways. What, looking back at, you know, with two daughters that have been married for a couple years now, right? It's been, yeah. And like, you're looking back, empty nester, all the things. What is like one thing you wish you could tell young Jill as your first daughter is being born, or like as you are heading to the hospital to give birth to your first daughter? What are things that you wish that you could tell her now that you are on this side of parenthood, where you are just the kind of a cheerleader almost of just like, hey, keep going in your marriage, keep doing this, you're doing great, whatever that looks like now. What do you wish you could tell young Jill?
I think what I tell every young parent who asks is just to enjoy every stage. I hated it when people would tell me when we were in a hard stage, oh, you know, these days, just blink and these days would pass and stuff. And I'm thinking, I am blinking as fast as I can. They are not passing. And the idea that there is something just great at every stage was so important for me because it kept me from looking too far ahead to what was coming if we were in a hard stage. Mm. It kept me from wishing back to an easier or what I thought was easier. I just really had blocked out what was hard about it. And it just let me really enjoy that. So I tripped up a little bit when it came to then when they're gone. Like I kind of dreaded that. Like I always loved being a parent. And I kind of dreaded the day when they would leave me and get married and all that. And here we are. And man, grown kids are so much fun. And so I think that's what I tell a lot of people now who are, you know, just lamenting the fact that their kids are graduating from high school or from college and dreading that. It's like, man, just wait. Like all the hard work that you did pays off because they are really fun adults. So
what you talk about the hard work, what was like, what were things that you and your husband like chose to intentionally do throughout all of that to like get to that point where you go, your hard work's going to pay off? Like what were things that you decided to do?
Well, we decided to do the really hard things really early. And by that, I mean, when we started disciplining young, you know, we didn't make excuses for our kids for all the things just because they didn't know better. We decided to teach them young what was right and what was wrong. I've known so many parents who were afraid to teach their kids something because they didn't want to quench their spirit or something or douse something that was in them. Well, we believe you can really encourage something that's in them and still give them great boundaries. So we set boundaries young and we tried to live really consistently by those, changing as we needed to and as our kids changed and as we got to know them as little humans, what they needed. But I think sometimes parents are afraid to do the hard things when they're young. And then they end up sending them to school and having all sorts of problems or hearing all sorts of problems from teachers. Not that I'm speaking from experience at all. But I can't tell you how many parents I wish I had done the hard things early so that when they came to school, they were much more set up for success. And not just school, but down the road too.
What would you say? Because I feel like we get in this sometimes. My family is... when you don't feel like the hard work is going to pay off, like you're in the midst of it and it's rough in your house and things, like you just feel like, I constantly yell at my kids. I constantly discipline my kids. What would you say to someone who's just in the middle of it and go, does it really pay off? Because right now I don't feel like it's paying off. And right now I feel like the bad guy all the time.
Oh, yeah. What a great question, because I think we've all been there too. And I feel like anything I say is so obvious, but I'm sitting on the other side of it. In the middle of it, it didn't feel obvious. But we really tried to surround ourselves with people that were a little ahead of us in the game.
That's good.
So that we could talk through some of these things and go, man, is this normal? You know, it's like, yeah, your middle school daughter is going to be really moody and she is not going to communicate necessarily with you, but that little girl that you knew is still in there and you will see her again on the other side. And so, having people that were ahead of us in the game was huge for us, especially if they were believers, because they're coming at it from the aspect of, you know, they're praying for their kid, they're raising them with a biblical perspective and all that. So
one thing I love about you and the relationship that you have with your daughters is that they genuinely love spending time with you now. Were there things that you did as they were growing up to kind of cultivate that relationship? Because as a parent, you don't want to be their friend when they're little, right? But now, when they're adults, you very much want to have a solid friendship with your kids. So could you tell me a little bit about that transition? And are there things that we can do as young parents to kind of cultivate that type of relationship with our children?
Ooh, I think that's a tough one, because I don't know that I set out with that goal in mind. Like, I didn't set out early on to say, I want to be friends with my kids eventually. I think what we really want to do is just to raise them to be caring, loving human beings. We wanted our family to be first. Outside of their faith in Christ, you know, we were a family, we're a team. Since I had two daughters, I always referred to each other as, you know, like, hey, that's your best friend there. And so we just really tried to build this sense of we are a team, we are a family, we. And I think what the Lord has been so gracious to do is to allow that to still be part of the fiber of who we are, that we are still a family and still a team. And I have one daughter who, we were talking about Christmas before this started, and who holds to our traditions really tightly. And I think, okay, in some ways, that's just such a beautiful thing, because that's part of the we that makes us who we are. So the fact that they still want to be around me is just a blessing beyond anything I could have expected. So.
But did you think that was possible in the difficult moments of discipline?
No. I could just end there, no. But I think especially when we were walking through harder seasons in their teenage years, I think it was that feeling of, gosh, am I doing this part right? Because soon they're going to be leaving me. Have I done everything I can? Because soon they're going to be leaving. And what if when they leave, they decide not to come back? And then throw in the whole idea that they're going to meet these boys. And those boys will then eventually be part of our family. Like, it was just, all of that was weird. Like, what if they meet a boy and move away and move far, far away, and all of these things that I had to work on in my, you know, let go of and surrender to the Lord and that kind of thing. But absolutely, there were times that I looked at it and went, whew, if they want to come back, that will be miraculous.
So that's, all right, so with my daughter, who is a senior this year, that's one of the things that we're wrestling with, is that, you know, I have to keep praying this. God, I want your will for my life, or for her life, not my will for her. And it's so tough not to project what I want for her, but what continually go, hey, this, what does God want for you? And that's one of those things where it is, you have to constantly keep it on your mind, because you do, you go, I want you close. I want you to pick a school that's here. I want you to hang out with these people. I want you to. And so that's a battle I have to fight every day of, God, I want your will for her life, not what I want, not my dreams, my visions. And I learned that I learned that very early in student ministry when I didn't have kids. I would watch parents project what they wanted, and I would go, and that was just one of those moments where I would go in the back of my mind and go, I can't do that to my kids. Mm-hmm. I've got to make sure I am going, God, your will, not my will, not their will, but your will. And that's big.
And I think that's when you, and I know you do this, that's when you pray that with your kid, that, you know, that I am praying the Lord's will for your life. And when I'm sharing these things with you, when I'm calling something out of you that I see in you to be a strength and part of who you are, it's not me telling you that's who you need to be. That's me recognizing something in you that I see the Lord doing in you.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of my daughters was worried about me when she was going away to college, and I heard her say to somebody, I'm worried about my mom. I'm like, whoa. Like, you don't need to be worried about me. I want you where the Lord wants you to be. At the end of the day, that's really all that matters. I'm going to miss you. It would be weird if I didn't.
Yeah.
But that's totally different than my saying, don't go. That's my saying, go. It's just going to be hard. Mm-hmm. And I want you to recognize the hard, because I'm recognizing the hard too. But this is where God is leading you, and man, I'm behind you.
Yeah, that was one of the conversations we had with Carson just recently. Mm-hmm. And she's my senior. She's my daughter. And I looked at her and I said, for the first time in your life, your vote's going to count more than our vote when it comes to where you go to school. And so as we were looking at colleges, I would go, hey, this one I like selfishly because it's here, but that doesn't mean that's where you need to be.
Yeah.
And that's tough to say.
Yeah.
That's tough to say because you want to go, no, I think this is the one
it's
God
the
wants
right
you
one.
At. Yeah.
The Lord told me.
It is. And you have to fight that. Yeah. As a parent, and but you also, I love what you said, because I've watched you, Miss Jill, and you are a huge prayer warrior. Mm-hmm. How much did prayer play a part of your parenting?
I realized, I think, the day we were bringing our first daughter home from the hospital, that there is no way that we were going to be able to do this apart from prayer. And I think it just became my language in the middle of the night and in all of the hard times. Like, that just became my second language. And prayer's been an enormous part of raising our girls, seeking wisdom, as James tells us to do, and trusting the Lord with that. And when they came to know Christ, and both of our girls, again, by the mercy of the Lord, came to know him at a really young age. And so just that idea that I get to be mom, not Holy Spirit, you know, mm-hmm. certainly going to lead them and guide them and direct them, but prayer was the primary way that we weathered the hard times. It showed us how to celebrate well, and it still is in this season the richest, best part of parenting for me.
Okay. So here's a question. And I think as a pastor and as a believer, I struggle with this. How do you not try to be their Holy Spirit? When you see them going the wrong direction, when you see them hanging with the wrong people, how do you go, all right, God, time for you to step up? Because I'm seeing things that you might not be seeing.
Helping him.
Yes.
Along
yeah.
the way.
Yeah.
But, well, it didn't ever diminish my role as parent.
Yes.
Right. Because the Holy Spirit's working in me. And so as he guides me to go, oh, your child's going off the rails here, you need to speak into
that's
that.
That's good. That's
then,
good.
Then, you know, that's my job.
Yeah.
But I'm also praying that the Holy Spirit will convict them, too, so that when we have these conversations, they recognize it as sin, or they recognize it as rebellion, or the start of something.
Gotcha.
And if they don't, then we're just going to pray more. The Lord will continue to reveal it to
them,
and
good.
He will. But it doesn't diminish my role.
Yep.
So what would you do, like, what was your relationship as a family with the church in kids ministry, then in student ministry? What did you do in family discipleship? What were practical things you did? Because that's, you know, how did you balance the time? Because you had athletes as well, mm-hmm. on top of both of them being very good students and being like high in grades and things like that. So, you know, y'all had a lot to balance on top of like the musical part of things. Like y'all were a lot. You did a lot.
Yeah.
So what was family discipleship both at church but also outside of church? Was it just a church? What were things, all of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we found a great church, first of all, one that we absolutely loved and that everybody loved. It was a church that when we first visited, I went, ooh, that is way too big for me. I will not be coming to a church. And it was, what, probably 1,700 at the time, which is big. And I even made the very firm declaration that I will not go to a church where my children are not known by name. And the Lord, in his beautiful sense of humor, the third week we were visiting, I'm coming down the hall with my three-year-old at the time. And in a very short distance, I had three adults, you know, call out to her, hey, Britta, hey, there's Britta. Britta, you're back. And she was like this little celebrity waving as we went by. I went, oh, Lord, that's so perfect. So they knew her by name. So we found a great church. And I really, not to then say, okay, it's the church's job, but we wanted to be in a church where we felt like we could partner, that the church was going to be a partner and a support for us. And then we served in those areas. So when our girls were in preschool, we were in preschool, not their classes necessarily. When they were in elementary school, we were in elementary school. And we had different roles, but we wanted to know what was going on in the ministries of the church so that we could then build on that at home. It gave us great conversations, great place to talk through things. And that, of course, carried all the way through high school. We really tried to, though, make it clear with our girls that your relationship with Jesus is not the same as going to church. So when we talked about their spiritual well-being, church was a piece of it, but it wasn't, you know, we tried not to say, okay, well, you went to church on Wednesday and Sunday, let's check those boxes, you're good.
Right.
It had to be something that we were encouraging them to do at home too and on their own. And so the church just allowed us to have those conversations really well.
Right.
It also had to be central to who they were. And so although they were involved in a lot of other things, you mentioned music. Well, let's let that play out in church, you know, rather than right. have a band on the side, which would have been hilarious anyway. you know, sports complicated things, but it was our commitment as a family that we weren't going to make a habit of missing out on the things that were going to feed them spiritually.
Right.
And then if that's, you know, teaching them too that if that's your team, then that's your place where you can witness. That's your place where you can live out your testimony. That's your place where you can love others well as Jesus would love them. And so wherever they were, just kind of allowing, encouraging them to kind of walk in that. I don't know if that answers that.
No, it does. And honestly, one of the greatest pitches I've ever heard to men is from your husband, where he's like, if you have daughters and you want to know what kind of guys they're going to be around, come serve in whatever ministry they're in, and you can see what is available for them to be dating.
Amen.
He did, and it was awesome,
like,
because
it's gotten a couple dads to like start serving, yes. and it's been amazing.
He was there just, and he would be in the equivalent grade as the girls,
yes.
but he would just be with that group of boys, and so he knew who was hanging out yes. with his daughters,
yes.
and he knew who was, you know, hey, you know, this guy and this guy, he knew them,
yeah.
and would have relationships and just build relationships with them. It was awesome.
I love the intentionality of really everything that you do, but especially your parenting. Okay, when, obviously it sounds like church and your spiritual life was a huge priority for your family. Did your girls ever go through a season where they didn't want to go to church?
Yes.
And if so, did you make that a requirement, expectation? Like, hey, like, as a family, as a team, we will worship together. And what did that look like?
So let me clarify. I said no quickly, because there was a time when they loved being in church, especially one of my daughters, but the idea of going to the student ministry was really overwhelming. I struggled with that because all of her friends and parents that we were friends with, everybody looked forward to it so much that when the time got here, they were all in, and she just wasn't. Like, that was, it was really intimidating. She was the one who, when she first went to high school and saw some of the things that happened in high school, came home and was like,
this is terrible. Like, don't make me go back, kind of a thing. And ended up thriving and doing fine. But, you know, just having her eyes open to things that were just, she'd been so protected from. So was really overwhelmed by that. And we wrestled with it. We wrestled mm-hmm. with the, do we still require her to go because this is important? Or do we say, okay, we're going to take baby steps? And that's really what we ended up doing. You know, we still worship together as a family. But this is something you're going to try. Mm-hmm. And if this is too much, then we'll talk about what else we need to do. Life groups was important. Being part of a small group was important. So that was a requirement. Was I going to push real hard on the Wednesday night? Not really. But I also wasn't going to let them call all the shots. Mm-hmm. So we were still going to try it, maybe take a break from it, try again. But it was never an option to not be a part of a worship community.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Were there certain like rhythms or things that you guys did at home as a family to kind of help cultivate like spiritual disciplines? I'm asking this because you said that the girls came to know the Lord at a young age. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of parents who do have children that are growing up in church and are kind of, quote, doing all the right things, mm-hmm. I think they wrestle with, you know, when my child becomes a teenager, will they still have this faith that is not based on mom or dad or based on strictly their attendance at church, but is it a faith that's really their own? Were there things that y'all did to kind of help cultivate their own spiritual practices as little girls?
I think some of the things that we did and some of the best things that took place spiritually for our girls took place in the car, because we were on the road a lot and we were in the mm-hmm. car a lot. And even because I was a teacher and I had the blessing of teaching in the school where my kids were, we had every morning together and every afternoon together. And so we would just, prayer would be our conversation in the car. And after the day, you know, we'd talk about the highs and the lows and where do you see the Lord and who are we praying for and those kinds of things. One of the sweetest things I can recall is we're driving along one day and my youngest daughter was looking out the window and she said, "Oh, dear Lord, thank you so much for this beautiful day and for the sunshine." And it was just that feeling of recognizing that they're learning this language too, that the Lord is somebody that we can talk to all the time. Mm. I still remember Corinne's very first prayer, and just completely unprompted, she prayed for a son. So after hearing the story of Hannah on her little hands and knees, just praying, "Lord, for a son." And I'm thinking, oh, if the Lord chooses to give her a son one day, I will be able to point back to that day in the kitchen on the floor. But some of those things that we just tried to weave them into every day so that they knew it wasn't me doing it, but it was part of their expression too. Mm-hmm. Yes, we had routines. Like, we had bedtime routines. I'm such a routine person and such a rhythmic person that we had certain things that we did every night. There were, but I let them speak into it. So if, you know, like we, at one point we just, you know, I'd give them three things and they could choose what they wanted to do tonight to end our day together. Sometimes it was to read a Bible story. It was sometimes to pray for, you know, we'd have a little prayer list or there was something like that. So I wanted them to take ownership super early on for mm-hmm. some of the things while I was still guiding them so that it was theirs, not just mine.
That's cool.
Because that was my story. You know, it was my parents' faith until I figured out in college that it had to be my faith. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted them to discover that a little bit earlier.
So, oh, Shane, are you thankful?
I am.
You got to keep that thing on silent, man. It's all right. Miss Jill, we got time for just this last bit. What would be like your final, like, thank you, first off? The word I keep thinking of is like exhortation. And I'm just like, it feels like we're just listening to Miss Jill's letter to parents. And so, like, what is your final just like encouragement, challenge to those that are in it now? Or like prepping, just the general parent for out there, whether that is soon to be brand new or at the end of school with high school and college decisions and all of that. What's your just final, just, hey, you got this. Mm. Here's why.
Don't lose heart. I think in the hardest days, it's easy to feel like, the Lord sees everybody else but doesn't see you. And that was my story, as I felt like
I was doing all the things as a mom that I knew to do and didn't always feel seen. So really resting in the knowledge that God is God of seeing, and he is the one who looks after us, that even when you don't feel seen, and there will be times when you don't feel seen as a parent, that you feel like your kid doesn't see you or listen or all of the things, that God is faithful to do what he says he's going to do, and he sees you, he loves you, he knows you completely. And I would also say that whatever you want your kids to be doing, whatever you want them to be practicing and walking out as a little disciple of Christ, you need to do yourself. And so it's really hard to teach your child about gratitude if you do not cultivate a life of gratitude. It's really hard to teach your child to be intentional if you're not being intentional, to listen to the Holy Spirit if you're not listening to the Holy Spirit. So just all of those things to practice what you hope the Lord does in your child and what you hope your child does. So you're kind of beginning with the end in mind.
That's awesome.
That's good.
Thank you so much, Miss Jill, for being on. Miss Jill, Mama Jill, whichever you're known as. This was honestly, it was super helpful. And yeah, that was good.
Well, thanks for having me. Y'all are fun.
Well, that is the end of this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it, getting to listen as much as I enjoyed getting to be a part of the conversation. And that's a conversation that we want you to be a part of. So if you text the word parent, P-A-R-E-N-T, to 98173, you'll get a link to a form where you're able to ask your questions that you may have, send us topic ideas that you'd love to hear us talk about, because we want to hear from you. We want this conversation to be both ways, not just us in a room, but you as parents or soon to be parents, a part of the conversation as well. And if you know someone in your life that is a expecting, soon to be, not yet, but wants to be, or a current parent, please send this to them. We want this to be a helpful resource more than anything. So please share it with whoever is in your life. Like it, subscribe to it so that you know when new episodes drop. Again, if you want to be a part of the conversation, and we want you to be part of the conversation, text PARENT, P-A-R-E-N-T, to 98173. Well, that's all for this week's episode. We will catch you guys next week. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you later. Bye.